You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Page to Stage,
a conversation with theater makers.
We're your hosts.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
To put it simply, we're both theater nerds.
So let's pull back the curtain and get a glimpse at the artist's process while creating their art.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shana Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So thanks for coming today.
Hi, Marissa.
Hi.
So nice to meet you.
Well,
nice
cheers, because we have a lot of liquids here in front of us today. You can cheers with water.
Cheers with water. It's a little hot where we are.
It's a bit of a heat wave today, I would say, right?
Yum.
But we're surviving. We have a fan going in the window, because if not, we would not survive this.
We'd be melted. Oh, so.
Yeah.
Let's just get right into it. So what did you go to school for, and how did that get you to where you are today, or your first thing right out of college?
All right. So I went to University of San Francisco, and I got my degree in performing arts and social justice. So it was all about the intersection of the two, how you can use the arts to make social change. So it was great. My concentration was in music. So I took traditional music courses like theory and composition and history of Western art music. And then I also took more social justice inclined classes. So music and social history. I took one course where we went into San Francisco Jail Number 5 and facilitated arts making with incarcerated men. We took anthropology of music. So it was really focused on how the arts can be a vehicle for social justice.
That's so interesting that you had a major that does that.
Yes.
Because when people ask me what my tagline is, or something that I really want to do with my work, or what type of work I'd like to do in the theater, I always say I want to use theater as a form of social change and to kind of put a mirror up to society and use past theatrical works, revive them, bring them back, and show modern audiences how they still apply and how those themes are still relevant.
Yeah.
So that's just so amazing that there was actually a major specifically for that. Now, was there a major specifically for that, or did you kind of mold into two majors or take certain classes that would get you what you had?
So that was the actual major. I remember when I was applying to colleges, I knew I wanted to do music. I grew up doing a lot of musical theater, and I really loved to sing. And I remember when I decided to apply to University of San Francisco and I was looking to see like what their performing arts department looked like, I was like, oh, performing arts and social justice. That's, if you're going to do performing arts at USF, that's really the only option you have. And then you can declare a concentration in music, dance, or theater. And so I'm from San Diego originally. And it can be kind of a bubble there. And so I was like, what is social justice? I didn't really have, I guess, the world context to understand exactly what I was signing up for when I decided to apply. And when I applied, I didn't really even think if I got in that I was going to go. I didn't really know much. I kind of applied on a whim. And then I ended up getting in and decided to attend. And I remember my first year, I was kind of like, what is all this social justice stuff? Like, I just want to play music and concentrate on the performance aspect of it.
Were you mainly a performer up until that point?
Yeah. And then by the time I had graduated, I was like, the social justice part is the only part that matters. Like, I was so into it. I think it's really important. I think it's great that that's something that, you know, you find important too and are trying to work with. Because we definitely need more people in the arts trying to use it as a tool for social change.
Absolutely. I'm really curious about, you said you went into jail number 5, is that what it was called?
Yeah, San Francisco jail number 5.
Yeah, so what was that experience like? It was with a class specifically?
Yeah, so the class, it was called PACE, and it stood for we'll come back to that. I need to remember what it stood for. We just always called it PACE. And so it was a class, how many of us were there? Maybe around 20, maybe not even that much. All the classes at USF are very small. And it was a mixture. So there were music students and dance students and theater students. And we went in, and the goal for the end of the semester is to put together a big performance piece that people can come into the jail and see. And so we kind of split off into groups with some of the men, and we're each assigned a part of the piece, whether it was, you know, a dance section or a music section or spoken word. And we worked in these individual groups. And then towards the end of the semester, all the groups came together and we found a way to mold it into one giant piece that flowed together. And we had an audience come in and see it, and we filmed it. So I like have a copy of it, and I still haven't watched it because I am so scared to being in there. It was a life-changing experience. When I talk about like the best moments I had in college, that it for sure is probably top two, is being in that class and working with those men. It really opened my eyes to the prison system in general. I hadn't really thought about it a whole lot until going inside and working with these men. They are all so wonderful, like just truly amazing people. Like we went in twice a week. And it was the highlight of my week to go in and work with these guys. And they're all super awesome. And it also made me appreciate my circumstances a lot more, to know at the end of, you know, the day when we all got to leave and they had to stay. Like, that was really tough. And at the end of the semester too, even having to say final goodbyes, like, that was really emotional and really, really tough.
So where did that fall in your 4 years there? Was that towards the end?
Yeah, that was my senior year. So my 4th year in the fall.
So when did you know that you wanted to get into casting, or was that always part of the plan within the 4 years?
No, it was not always part of the plan.
Did you have a clear goal towards the end of your 4-year trajectory that you said, I'm going to get out of school and focus on pursuing this part of theater?
Well, when I started school, I didn't think I was going to focus on theater at all. So I grew up doing musical theater, and I loved doing musical theater. But unfortunately, USF, you could either choose, it was like straight acting, dance, or music. There wasn't a musical theater track, and all the theater courses were not focused on musical theater. And so I was like, okay, I like musical theater because I like the music. I like to sing. So I don't think the theater track would be the best fit for me. So I decided to do music. And when I was applying to other colleges, I was focusing either on purely a music track or if they had musical theater. I was considering that. And so when I started at USF, I was like, okay, I'm just going to focus on music, playing music, singing, like songwriting, composition, more of that type of stuff. And was really trying to turn my, I guess, experience into something that it was not possible. Like there are tons of people on the music track at USF that are like into the singing, songwriting track. I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? But they're in like that pocket, and it's totally possible to just focus purely on music and in the performing arts and social justice department. But I don't know. I guess I couldn't escape the theater part either. And there is a student-run theater group on campus called College Players. And I have a friend that I grew up doing theater with. We went to high school together. She also went to USF. And she was a theater major. And she's a year ahead of me. So she had been at USF for a year. She was a sophomore when I started. And she was like, oh, they're doing Little Shop this year. You should totally audition. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I think I'm kind of done with theater. Like, you know, shows are such a huge time commitment, and I wasn't really sure if I, you know, wanted to, you know, commit that much time to rehearsals and most likely probably just get like an ensemble part. You know, I was so used to the politics of small town community theater. So I was like, no, there's no way. Like, I'll probably be like tree number two or something, you know?
The mini plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I like wasn't going to do it. And then last minute decided to audition, and that changed, like becoming a part of that group really changed everything. So I started doing shows through them. And then my sophomore year, I directed Rent. So it was completely student run. You could apply to direct or choreograph, be a stage manager, et cetera. And so I did Rent my sophomore year.
Did you get to pick the show that you directed, or was it already assigned?
So in my case, I did get to pick, but it was a special circumstance. Usually the way the group does it is you they do a fall and a spring play, and you can apply to direct and you can come with a show. So you would apply to direct a specific show. The musical, since it's like the big production every year, the board of this group would choose it, and then you could just apply to direct it. And so originally when they announced the season, it was Chicago. So I applied to direct Chicago and was chosen for that, and then they didn't get the rights. So they came to the choreographer and I'm like, listen, we're really sorry, but we couldn't get the rights. We can't do Chicago. We still want you on board. And, you know, kind of as an apology, you know, let us know what you want to do. And if we can get the rights, then we'll do that. And so I sat down with the choreographer, who is still one of my best friends today. And we kind of thought about how big the group was and how what the turnout for auditions would be, and thought, you know, Rent actually is a really good show for the resources, you know, and the people that we have. So we got to choose.
You could
Rent.
Do some social reform, right?
Yeah.
Social change with Rent.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so that's where casting came into play. At the end of the run, I looked back and I was like, I loved directing the show and being able to put it on, but my favorite part was the audition process and being able to sit in auditions and do callbacks and help cast the show and pick the people, you know, to put it together. And so that's why I was thinking, okay, casting might be a good option to start thinking about, you know, after I graduate, because not only is it something that I enjoy, but I can also apply the social justice aspect of my degree into it. You know, we need more people that are going to advocate for people of color and women and people from marginalized groups to get into the room. And so that was kind of my thinking and why I decided to look into casting after I graduated.
I love that. So when you graduated, you moved right to New York City?
Yes, I have always wanted to live in New York. In eighth grade, we did like a DC, my school did a DC trip, and we only spent like 24 hours in New York. I cannot tell you anything outside of those 24 hours. Like, that's all I remember from that trip is going to New York. We saw Wicked on Broadway, and I bought one of those like tacky I Heart New York sweatshirts. Like, I really only went on this trip to go to New York.
Wow.
So I've always known that I wanted to live here.
And you were here before you graduated,
yeah,
which is how I met you.
Yeah.
Because we interned together at Broadway Teachers Workshop.
Yeah.
Was that your second time then being?
Yeah.
I guess first time like really like experiencing the city.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
No, that was a really great, I kid you not, on the plane ride home, I like teared up. I was like, I don't know when I'm ever going to be back. Like, that was such an amazing 2 weeks. Like, it was so much fun. I was very devastated when that ended, but I kind of made it my mission then, like, okay, I've spent some time in the city. I know I like it. I would love to live there. Whatever I do after graduation, I'm going to try to make sure it works with being in New York. And then around April of my senior year, I had applied. Syracuse does a program called the Tepper Semester. And it's kind of designed to be like study abroad. Like, you're really supposed to do the semester while you're still in your undergrad. Like, you'll take a semester, like leave your home institution and come to New York and do the Tepper semester. And you can do tons of different tracks. Like, there's acting and directing, like theater administration. But one of the tracks you can do through this program is casting. They have a casting apprenticeship program. And so you do an internship in a casting office.
And did you get placed at a casting office?
Yes. So they ask us like what some choices are that we would like to, and they try to get us, you know, in an office that we already know we would like to work at, but it's not guaranteed. You know, they have to check in with the office and see if they're even looking for interns. I got placed at Tara Rubin Casting, which was my top choice, so I felt very fortunate. And it was office. Amazing. Yeah, oh my gosh, the team there. I have nothing but good things to say about the people that work there. So I worked at the office Monday through Friday and then took courses in the evening taught by casting professionals, and then we saw two shows a week. So it was a very busy time. I moved here in June of 2017, and the program started in August. It was August to December. So from August to December, I was working in a casting office 5 days a week and then doing the classes and the shows in the evening. So it was just a very packed couple of months, but it was great. It was a really good intro into that world and New York. And I made lots of friends. So
what were some of your responsibilities working in the casting office?
There was a lot of assembling headshots and resumes and, you know, packing the kits before auditions. A lot of helping schedule the appointment. So I would send out all the emails to the agents and the managers and build the schedule and put all of that together. Because the team is so great and they were really invested in making sure their interns also got to sit in the room and see what happens, I did get to go and sit in on a lot of auditions.
Oh, that's so valuable.
Which was really awesome. Yeah. So I got a really well-rounded experience at the office. I think I definitely got to see all sides.
Did you pursue casting after working at Tara Rubin's office?
Yeah. So the program ended in December and I started applying. I actually got really lucky that one of the casting assistants at Tara Rubin's office at the time also did the Tepper program. And so she made herself super available to me if I had any questions. And she had shared a list of contacts that she had made while she was doing Tepper. She had interned at Telsey, and then that she had accumulated after the program working in casting, and she shared it with me. So I just started shooting off cold emails with my resume to these casting directors to see if anyone needed an assistant. And I actually got quite a few responses. It was really great. And I got interviewed at a couple places and got some offers. And I ended up getting hired by Jessica Daniels. So she hired me to start in January of 2018, and we did pilot season for Fox and then worked on some indie films. So that was a really great experience.
So I'm assuming her office was mostly for film and TV versus theater?
Yeah, that was the only thing. It was a switch as far as the type of projects that we were working on. But I welcomed that. I was actually kind of looking not for like a permanent switch, but I also felt like if I, you know, want to work in casting, I need at least one pilot season under my belt. So that was a really great learning experience to see how that process works on the casting end.
And so from your perspective, how does the day run if you're holding auditions? Were you in the room with casting?
Yeah, casting sometimes. Director? Her office was really small. It was just her and her associate and myself. You know, I think like if you were to compare it to like Tara Rubin's office where there's more a much bigger staff, you know, they can afford to let their interns and assistants in the room because there are other people holding down the fort outside of the room. Versus with Jessica, she did let me come in the room, and if her associate was busy, I got to help like tape and stuff, which was awesome. But I would say majority of the time I wasn't in the room because I was greeting actors as they came in and made sure that they, you know, knew where to find their sides, getting them water, kind of just monitoring the office while they were in the room. And then I was editing. They would come back and like give me the tapes and I would start editing them like while they're still running session.
So from your perspective, what are some do's and don'ts in the waiting room since you had to deal with that a bunch?
For the most part, I can't remember any clear moments where...
I mean, definitely don't be late, right?
Yeah, don't be late. As someone that would like help build the schedule, and it was definitely frustrating when people came out of order because it just kind of screws the whole flow of everything up. And I would say like, be quiet if you can, just because, you know, we'd have like a little lobby waiting area where they'd be waiting, and then they'd be filming literally in the next room. So if you're making tons of noise out in the lobby, you can hear it on the tape, which is really annoying. But also, like, I guess I really appreciated it if actors, like, if they couldn't find their sides or needed to know where the bathroom was or had any questions, like, they did approach me and they, you know, asked what they needed. And I appreciated that because I'm like, it's, I think it's always good to be prepared. And that's why I was there, is to be a resource to them. So, you know, I think that's definitely, if you have a question and there's someone there that could potentially answer it, you know, ask, be respectful. But
so it's not like they're bugging you.
Yeah, no, yeah, I did not view it like that.
Because I think a lot of time people are so scared to just even make themselves heard,
yeah,
in cases like that, just to not be a bother.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. Because I feel that some way too, just like in life, you know, you want to, you know, fly under the radar as easy as possible. No, but I think if you have a question, there's someone there who can answer it. If it's going to help you be better prepared and feel better in the room, like, absolutely take the opportunity to ask the question.
How did you transition out of casting now? When did you decide that you were going to pursue entertainment law?
So that, my current job kind of fell into my lap in the sense, so I went back to the Tepper program to speak on an alumni panel. And while I was there, got questions asked about what I did in school. So I, you know, gave my whole performing arts and social justice spiel. And one of the gals that was also an alumni and was there to speak worked at this law firm that I work at now. And she approached me afterwards and was like, hey, you know, I know you're working in casting now, and I'm not sure, you know, what your plans are once this job is done. Because most of casting is freelance. So it's kind of like, all right, like a lot of like assistants and associates hop around from casting director to casting director.
So you're not like permanently with them. You could be jumping around every 6 months, would you say? Or
it depends. Like it could be as short as, you know, 2 weeks, and it could be as long as I think it depends on the director and like what, how much work that they have.
What about working with multiple offices at the same time?
That I'm not sure how many people do that or if it's even possible, because when you're casting a project, it's pretty busy from start to finish. Like when I was working for Jessica, there's no way I could have also worked at another office. There was just too much to do. I think it also depends, like an office like Telsey or Tara Rubens, where they have so many projects. It's like they can afford to employ a staff full time, but then there are casting directors like Jessica where they really just have, you know, their two employees. So I think it depends on what office you're working for, but majority of them, they're very, very small, and they will only hire employees for the duration of a project until they get their next project. So I worked with her from January to March of that year. And so this gal approached me at the alumni panel and was like, I'm not sure how long your contract is and if you want to stay in casting or not, but if you're interested, I work at an entertainment law firm. We're looking for a new assistant, and I think your background, you know, would make you a really great fit for this office. She said they kind of operate like a nonprofit in a way, and that they do a lot of pro bono work for like up and coming people that want to work in the arts, lots of recent grads that are trying to break into the industry, kind of with the idea of like client development, like we'll, you know, help work on this contract for you for now, and then, you know, help you get where you need to go. And then when you get big and famous, you know, hopefully then we can officially sign you, like, you know, have it come full circle. And she said that they were a very social justice inclined office and really advocated for women and people of color to make sure that they are getting, you know, the same as their white male counterparts. And that definitely interested me. And as much as I loved casting, the freelance aspect of it was really tough on me, like being fresh out of school with student loans, and I'm a planner. I like to know what's next, and not knowing like when the next job was coming really stressed me out. And so this was an opportunity to get more experience in the industry from a different standpoint, and also apply the social justice part of my degree, and also have a full-time job. So I decided to interview and ended up getting hired. And yeah, so that's where I am now.
So what type of, or is it theater focused, or because you said arts, but is it, I guess, what type of arts are you guys covering?
So we do everything. We do, we mainly represent, I'd say, actors, but some directors and some writers for theater, film, and TV. So it's definitely a well-rounded pool of clients. I would say majority of it are, you know, actors working in film and TV, but we do have a good handful of theater clients.
I'm not really familiar with entertainment law other than what I researched before we're having this episode, but I'm just wondering, what type of work do you do on a day-to-day basis, and what kind of clients, what do they come in and ask for you to represent them with?
Yeah, so I guess my day-to-day as an assistant, there are three partners at our firm, and they all have like an assigned assistant, and then there are four associates, and they also utilize the assistants. But it's kind of, you know, you can just kind of ask whoever is free. So I support one specific partner. So my day-to-day, I would say a lot of it is administrative work. So filing, archiving, running red lines of contracts, placing calls, you know, taking notes, et cetera. And what was the second part of your question?
You're saying you're going over contracts. Yeah. What are these contracts? What are people coming to your office and asking for you guys to represent them with?
Yeah. So it's mainly actors. And so they'll come with, an offer or a test deal, for a project, and or I guess usually their agent or their manager will then bring it to their lawyer.
Right, because that's what I was thinking. Yeah. I was thinking, like, as an actor with an agent, you would usually bring your contract would usually go through your agent for negotiations, mm-hmm. or manager.
Yeah.
So at what point does it become necessary to bring you in as someone that works within a law firm?
Not everybody out there has a lawyer. So like if you don't have a lawyer, it will be mainly, your agent or your manager or both that are negotiating your behalf. But if you have a lawyer, then the offer will, go through your agent. And then the agent, usually what they'll do is they'll, call our office or, shoot an email to the lawyer and be like, hey, just so you know, like, we have this offer coming through, be prepared. And then they'll loop the lawyer in on the chain, like the email chain, and kind of like, hey, like, looping in their attorney, and like, they'll take it from here, and they negotiate. It's a deal memo. So it's just kind of like the big basic chunks. Like, first they'll negotiate the fee, and then they'll get into more of the nitty gritty details. Like, for a film, like, trailer size, travel, if they're working on a TV series, like, if it shoots somewhere where they don't live, like, are they going to get a relocation fee? Is production going to cover housing? What about hair and makeup? Do they get a say in that? Also, like, back end box office bonuses. Like, there are so many little things that go into an actor's contract that I had no idea did until I started working at this office. But the lawyer basically steps in and negotiates and makes sure that the client is getting the best possible deal that they can. And then once that's all wrapped up, then the lawyer will say, okay, like, I approve this for a signature, I'll send this to my client and then send it back to you.
I'm wondering if you, like, have picked up on any tips for any of our listeners out there that are either actors or just trying to negotiate.
I would say one of the things I've picked up on from the lawyers is, I guess, like, the facts really, like, they don't lie. So if if an offer comes in for a client that has a pretty decent resume and they totally lowball the fee, you can't, most of the time the lawyer will come back and be like, hey, look, these are their credits. This is what they've done. This is what they've been paid in the past for projects like this. Like, this is their following. Like, if they were to be attached to this project, they're going to bring, like, a huge following to it with their name, and that's, if we're renegotiating for a raise, like, if they're on a TV show, we want to renegotiate the raise for the season. It's kind of like, well, here's all the ratings. Here is the social media following of this client. Like, this is how many times people are searching this specific person. Like, really just kind of show the value of the client, and you can't really argue with statistics and ratings and the numbers.
So would you say that these clients are usually at a different level than somebody maybe right out of school?
Yeah. I
know you said that you try and get people at the beginning of their careers and try and invest time and work into them. But, just the plain fact of the matter is a lot of acting jobs, some of them are pretty low paying.
Yeah.
And so to be able to afford to even have a lawyer on your team is a luxury.
Yeah.
So what kind of level do you see most of your clients at? And, do you represent big people?
Yeah, we...
Without disclosing any identities.
We definitely... I would say it's a pretty even mix. Like, we do represent a good amount of, like, pretty big, like, star power names. But we also have a good amount of people that are up and coming, or maybe, like, if you're really on the pulse of, like, the entertainment industry, you would know who they are, but maybe they are not a household name. And we do represent, you know, a good amount of people that are fresh out of college, or maybe, you know, a couple of years out, that are, you know, maybe getting smaller roles, or, you know, or I guess, I don't know if smaller roles is the right way to put it, you know, all roles are important. You know, but there, it's maybe not as big of jobs or as high paying jobs. So it really, I would say it's a really even mix. We do have a good, like a pretty big client list.
Would you say that, so do you represent any writers or any people that, like, producers that are looking to get, like, option a show? I'm trying to think of, like, the other side of it.
Yeah, we don't really represent producers, but we do represent writers. We have a handful of writers that do, I'm, like, trying to think, films, theater, and TV, actually. So we do rep writers. And then we also, like, we rep actors that want to option stuff. So we will help, like, secure rights and, you know, all of that. It's definitely not the biggest chunk. Like, it's not a whole lot of clients.
It's definitely an element of the office.
Yeah, but we will do that.
Are there any differences between, I guess, the work or, I guess, like, the work behind repping a writer or trying to option a show versus an individual person or an actor?
I guess the process is a little different. Like, negotiating an actor's contract for a project, it's going to look different than, you know, helping somebody, you know, option a project, or like a writer's agreement or director's agreement. It does look different than an acting agreement, but I don't necessarily know or think that the way that the lawyers would approach it is any different. You know, like, they still fight for the clients and make sure that they're getting the best deals. It's just, you just have to have, you're just talking about different things.
So how do you keep creativity in your life and that aspect of definitely social justice and reform in the law system, but how do you keep creativity in your life in a day-to-day job that you have to follow rules and you're working on contracts and you're picking apart facts?
I guess in my free time, I'm doing a lot of my own research. I read a lot of scripts. I love to read scripts. I'll read Deadline and Variety and Hollywood Reporter and try to keep, you know, my thumb on different veins of the industry. I see a lot of theater still. That's kind of, you know, it's because most of our clients are working in film and TV, I try to still see theater when I can. I don't want to lose touch with that aspect of entertainment.
So you wouldn't say that your job provides you that level of creativity that you were used to in a casting setting or in college?
Yeah, unfortunately, no. And that's probably, like, I love my job and I love the people that I work with, but I do wish I was doing something maybe a little more creative, because, you know, I've only really ever been working on the creative side of things up until now. Not to say that the business side is not important. Like, this has really shown me, like, it's super, super important and everybody should have a lawyer because it really does help you in the long run. But yeah, I do miss working on more creative stuff. So I try to supplement that by, you know, in my free time, still going out and experiencing, you know, theater and seeing films. What is really nice is, you know, our office has provided us the opportunity to make sure that we see anything that our client is in. So in a way, I have been able to, I guess, consume more entertainment just because we have so many clients and stuff. And so I'm almost more motivated to, like, go out to the movies and see, you know, a film that maybe I wouldn't have considered before because I want to see the client in action. So
are you able, or do you have the luxury of pursuing your own work on, like, your off time? Like, would you consider directing again, or would you consider, like, producing your own side piece, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's I guess it would just depend on how big of a time commitment. Like, you know, I do work like 40, 45 hours a week being in the office. So it's not like I have a ton of time during the day. But if I wanted to work on a side project, as long as I can make that work around like my office hours, like it's my job. It's not like my boss has ever said, no, you can't do anything on your own. Like, I am totally free to do stuff like that. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. The time management piece. I totally get it.
So you've only been at the law firm for the past year?
Yeah.
Right? So you really haven't been around for what I'm about to ask you, but maybe some of your coworkers have mentioned something about this. Have you noticed a shift in the element of technology and the digital age that we're living in affecting the work that you guys do in the office and the way that you guys handle representing clients?
Yeah, I guess pilot season especially, we'll get, like, pilot season was crazy. We got a ton of test deals, and it's like, oh, you know, you have like your usual, like, there's like Netflix and HBO and Hulu, and then it's like, oh, well, now Apple's creating a streaming service, and Disney's gonna have a streaming service, and Warner Brothers is gonna have, like, there's so many new streaming services popping up. And so it was really interesting to not only, I guess, just the knowledge that there's going to be a new streaming platform, but also it's like, okay, now how do they, or how are they gonna run things differently from, like, the usual big ones that we know? And it's also, it's easy if, you know, like, if you get a contract from HBO, it's like, okay, let's look on past deals that we've worked on for clients for HBO projects, and then we can compare precedent and, you know, kind of just, we have a baseline to work off of. And, you know, when you get a contract from, you know, a company that you've never done a deal with before, it's like, all right, we're really starting from scratch, and now we have to come in, and maybe they don't want to give certain things that we're used to getting for clients for other streaming platforms. It's like, okay, well, now how do we try to convince them that this is important? This is something that we would get from Netflix or from HBO. And, you know, so it's definitely, I don't want to say it like adds more work, but there's definitely a level of like, all right, like, we really gotta, you know, sit down and work through this and, you know, make sure, like, it's really great that we have clients that are getting, you know, projects for all these new sites, but sometimes it can be, I guess, a little difficult to try to rework the system so that they get
probably
everything.
Because you're starting at ground zero,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Now I have a question. So pilot season with streaming services, is that still a thing? Because streaming services, I mean, I'm not sure, but it feels like they're nonstop. Like, Netflix is coming out with original shows constantly. So would you say that there is still a pilot season in that case?
I mean, there's still a pilot season that we still get. We'll get test offers for the streaming shows. And it, you know, I guess, like, it's...
It's elongated.
Yeah, it's...
And I mean, I don't work in what you do. But what I would think is the winter and spring are definitely heavier than the summer and fall, right?
Yeah, it's definitely busier those times of years. And I think, I guess from our end, with streaming services, it still kind of functions the same. Like, we'll still get test deals for clients, and maybe the process will be a little more expedited in that, like, okay, like, they're not necessarily going to, like, film a pilot and see if it's going to get picked up to series, but they, like, clients still have to test. You know, maybe they'll have like four options. Like, you still have to test and see if they'll even book the role. So on our endpoint, it's kind of like, all right, we're negotiating a test deal and the client may or may not book it. If they do book it, then maybe the process will look a little different after that. But the beginning stages of just seeing if they get the role is, as far as I know, the same.
I'm curious as to what your favorite part of your job is.
My favorite part, honestly, it's just knowing all this information that other people aren't aware of. Like, it's definitely, you know, a lot of it is numbers and contracts and paperwork. But if you, in my free time, like, sometimes I'll sit down and read a contract, and it's just really interesting to know. And all these little details that were negotiated as part of, you know, this person's deal. And then I'll go and, like, watch the film or watch the play or something, and I'll sit there and I'll be like, wow, I literally know so much more about, and it's like not even simply knowing, like, oh, I know what this person got paid. It's also like, I know what your dressing room situation is like, and I know, like, what your relocation fee is. And it's not necessarily like any of that information enhances my, like, viewing experience or, like, the way that I consume you know, the projects.
It's kind of like pulling back the curtain a bit, I would
think. It's just, it's more, it's, you know, it's, it almost is more exciting to watch in a way. It's like to see the project come to life after just talking about the numbers of it and the business side of it. Then it's really cool to be like, wow, you're up on stage, or I'm watching you at the movie theater, and like, we, you're able to do this because we fought for all of those other things for you. And now, because you got everything you needed to put 110% into this project, I get to watch a really great film, you know, and everyone else gets to see why we fight so hard for you, because all of our clients are so insanely talented, you know? So it's just a, it's a very rewarding feeling to then watch the project at the end.
So who is your point of contact when you're negotiating something? Is it the casting directors?
It depends.
Because I'm wondering how your experience working in casting has bled into this and how it assists and helps you navigate. And if you've learned anything that you're like, oh, I could think of it from that perspective now because I've worked in casting.
Yeah. I would say that probably comes in more to play, especially during pilot season and test deals. Because if a client gets a straight offer on a project, then we already know they got it. It's just a matter of negotiating the actual contract and the deal. And when it comes down to that, we will usually, if it's with a large studio, then we'll talk to their business affairs. They usually have an in-house lawyer. So like Netflix, Sony, et cetera, all the big ones, it'll be lawyer to lawyer contact. And then we also, you know, check in with the client's agents and managers and, you know, et cetera. But I would say during pilot season, when it's more test deals versus straight offers, that for me, I was like, oh, I already know what a test deal is because working in casting, I understood how that process worked from the casting side. And it obviously, like, I'm not the lawyer. I'm not the one like negotiating or, you know, making commission off of the actual deal, but it's very, it almost, by having the well-rounded experience, because I've been on the casting side of things, it's like sometimes, obviously we want our clients to book everything, but sometimes they don't. Like, that's just how it goes. But it almost makes me, I guess, a little more sympathetic to sometimes it doesn't go the way that we had hoped. But I also know that sometimes on the casting end, like, there's also a lot of pressure and stress and time and effort that goes into that. And I know that they're also working really hard on their end. Like, I think, you know, I don't think I've really had a straight shot from like graduation to where I am now. Like, I've tried a little bit of everything, which I think sometimes feels really chaotic. But it's also been great because in me having a more well-rounded idea of like how all sectors of this industry works, it makes me, I guess, a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? Flexible and understanding of where everyone's coming from, and just knowing that everyone's trying to work hard to put together something great. And when you've been in the other person's shoes that you're, you know, communicating with, it definitely helps. So I guess, at least on my end, I always think very highly of the casting offices that we talk to because I've been in their shoes before.
So I wanted to know what, if you have like a goal or like what your next steps would be. In a perfect world.
Oh, gosh. Okay. In a perfect world.
Or your dreams.
My dreams.
Dreams and aspirations.
Yeah.
So the thing is I still do not know what I want to do long term. I've kind of just been taking my career path so far as like process of elimination. I'll try everything out. I'll learn what I don't want to do. And then I'm one step closer to figuring out what I do want to do. What interests me as the next step is development. I kind of want to figure out like what positions are out there, so, like who's deciding what projects are getting produced. I still want to incorporate the social justice aspect. So at this point, like, okay, I've done the casting as far as like seeing how people get in the room. And now I've done the actual business side and seeing how people advocate. Like once that person books the job, who's deciding like what jobs are even really out there, who like what stories are being told. And I think really it's like, obviously we want to see diverse casts and diverse projects and, you know, casting choices being made, but we also need more like Black Panthers and Crazy Rich Asians and like stories that focus on diverse characters as like real human beings. So for me, I think development, I love reading scripts, like whether that's, you know, going to a production company or maybe working for like a literary agent. I haven't quite figured out yet. And I'm not in a rush to leave my job at all. I really like my job. But my next steps, that's kind of what I'm thinking about. But again, like everything sounds interesting. I want to try a little bit of everything. And then hopefully somewhere along that, like something will stick and I'll, you know, have the aha moment.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. I'm sure you do too a little bit, but yeah, for sure. And when you said that you were reading scripts like on your off time or yeah. like when you're doing, I was like, yes, this is totally makes sense.
Yeah. I would like to also maybe get back more into the theater world. I do miss that. The film and TV aspect of entertainment is super entertaining and I love doing that as well, but I miss the, you know, once a theater kid, always a theater kid.
Yeah. We ask all of our guests as a final question, what was the last great piece of theater that you saw?
Oh, gosh.
Something that really stuck out, and I'm hoping it's something that has to do with social justice.
Okay. So I wouldn't say that this is anything I've seen most recently, but I will never, for as long as I live, shut up about the show Indecent. Rocked my world. I saw it twice, had a very visceral, emotional reaction both times. I tell everybody that they filmed it for PBS to go watch it. Like, that was life-changing. I have never seen a piece of theater that did what that show did. Also, I saw People, Places, and Things at St. Anne's.
Yeah.
That was also really, really great.
What's that one about?
I didn't actually see it. I just had a bunch of friends who saw it, and they just couldn't stop talking about how amazing it was in the performance because it was a solo show, right?
Pretty much, essentially.
But it had to do with addiction, right?
Yeah, it was about this young woman who was struggling with addiction, and she goes into a rehab center, and it just kind of talks about how she navigates her life with, you know, drugs playing a key part in it. But I think they did a really great job of taking, I mean, I don't do drugs, so I wouldn't really know what that feels like, but I felt like I knew what that felt like after the show. Like, they took
all your senses in the room and really made it visceral.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what they did.
Yeah, that's pretty much what my friend said as well. And it was at St. Anne's Warehouse, which that's where the current Revival of Oklahoma transferred from. Mm-hmm. They're doing some really amazing work, and it's always so interesting. And I find that a lot of their work, they just did The Jungle also, which I think has that social reform aspect to it.
Yes.
I think they're doing a lot of that kind of work, which is really cool.
There you go.
In Dumbo, Brooklyn.
Yeah, the space is gorgeous. Really
and
great.
And it transforms.
Yes.
Every time you go there, it's different.
I love that space.
Yeah, that's really why I love black box theaters, because you're able to completely change the experience based on where the audience sits and how the audience is interacting with the piece.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really want to go. I haven't been to St. Anne's, so I really need to get there to see a show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Of course.
We're so happy to have
you. I learned so much. I knew that I was going to learn so much from you today, but my brain is just like,
This was a completely new aspect of the business that I really didn't know much about.
Awesome.
So I'm so glad we were able to get you on here and give our listeners that treat.
Yeah.
Thank you.
See you later.
Bye.
Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Page to Stage. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Page to Stage Podcast.
And if you're enjoying these conversations, we would really appreciate it if you could take a couple minutes to rate and review us wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com. And of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.